Hello, everybody. I'm very excited to be here with Jan Jaap Jager. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but he is the CEO of Chainstack. We've got a really interesting show for you guys today. We're going to talk through integration, blockchain as a service, software as a service, and how to make Web3 and blockchain more usable to more people. JJ, if I can call you that, how are you doing today?
Very good, very good. And yeah, Jan Jaap Jager is like how you call it in Dutch. Especially the G is very important in our language, right? Everything takes a while, especially I just came back from an Easter week in the Netherlands. And after the first day speaking Dutch again, your throat starts hurting because I don't speak it so much anymore. But then that special G in the language definitely makes you feel it that you're Dutch. But yeah, everybody calls me JJ, so feel free to call me JJ.
Sounds good to me. I'm based in Portugal, and so the G is quite important here as well. But for the international audience, we'll drop the G and we'll try and keep it plain speaking so everybody can follow along. With that as an intro, JJ, for those people who don't know about you, who haven't met you yet, could you give us your brief Web3 origin story? How did you find yourself working in blockchain?
I think that starts fairly early on, not knowing where this would go to, but I run a company in 2012, 13, 14, and I was in the infrastructure space as well. So we did virtualization, dedicated server projects for relay stations and enterprises. And we had data centers around the world. And every 2 weeks I was traveling from Germany, because I was based in Germany back then, to St. Louis, because there we had a data center. And it was a very small team. And there were two support engineers literally sitting in the same room where I was sitting. And they constantly were talking about their under the staircase machines that were mining something. So that was my first, and that was, I would say, the end of 2012 or beginning 2013, where I got exposed to, they were mining Bitcoins. No idea what it was, tech stuff, and I'm not a technical person, but from a background perspective, it's more like the management's piece and business piece. So I didn't pay attention towards it until they asked me a question. JJ, we have so much space in the data center. Could we not just put our server in the data center? Because it makes so much noise at home and my wife doesn't like it. And I said, sure, why not? But that decision I turned around very quickly, knowing in a sense of how much electricity those particular boxes were consuming. Back then, of course, I didn't pay a lot of attention towards it, but years later, I was then pulled back into this particular space because of the whole cycle, the hype. And also with my previous company, we started a project to add new innovation technology on top of our software-defined storage solution. And then I got introduced with that. But yeah, that was the first kind of introduction towards Bitcoin in 2013, where I didn't want to have anything of it, so to say.
Very interesting story. I can see the guy saying, we just got a little bit of extra space. Couldn't we just put some boxes there? Can we put some extra ones? We've got a whole bunch of capacity, right? We're not using.
Two of the support engineers said, oh yeah, like we had like plenty of space, so that was not the problem, not the issue. But not knowing, of course, that it was consuming a lot of electricity, that was, of course, not so good.
There we go. A very interesting origin story. That's a new one for me. And while we're on the subject of origin stories, let's talk about Chainstack. That's what we're here for today. For people who haven't heard about Chainstack before, or who maybe have heard about blockchains, but don't necessarily understand the importance of everything that sits behind that, or everything that sits in enabling the use of blockchains, tell us a little bit about how Chainstack got started.
So it started with the CTO that currently is also co-founder of the company, Eugene Asiev. He was together working with me in another company called Acronis, a security company. And we had this software-defined storage solution where we wanted to add a new innovation layer. And of course, that was during the boom, the hype of the ICO launches. And we basically said, hey, what if we can make our software-defined storage solution, the first storage solution that we can prove that any data that is stored on this storage solution has not been tampered with. And we can prove it by showing into the Ethereum chain that this data was stored at this date and has been since that date that it was stored, not tampered or changed with. So it was a real cool gimmick. no intention of commercialization, but it was really about trying to see how we can innovate as a company. That project was not as easy because, and I think that we have had plenty of conversations also with some of the recordings that you did about Web2 trying to get into this particular space and the hurdles that we have from the technical challenges. And it's the same thing that we went through. So it took a while for us to get everything running, and we did everything ourselves, of course, from node management and so on. We developed an application on top of that as well. And after that project was finished, we basically said to each other, hey, this is interesting. If we, as a company, highly technical, thousands of developers, have not the capabilities of making sure that this is easy, accessible, and easy to manage, then there must be kind of room for other companies there as well, especially in the enterprise traditional space that are mostly lagging behind of innovations because they're first looking and then adopting. And that's how the company got started, in the sense that Gene had a great vision together with the daughter co-founder, Laurent, and they started the company with a small little budget and started hammering down all the code and trying to establish Chainstack, but with a little bit of different focus on it, because there were some similar node providers, infrastructure providers into the market space, and they were very much focused on the developer piece and the single use and how you make it easy for a single developer to adopt this technology. But we believe that the enterprise and the larger companies and the companies that need certain structures, talking about SSO and security separation, multi-tenancy, multi-tiering, and control panels, because they have not a need of access to one particular protocol, but they want to have everything and they have different departments with different kind of projects. How do you manage that, right? Supplying one single node to one single developer for one single project, that's still manageable. But how do you do that in a mass scale, large enterprise with, now we know, with multiple chains and protocols and the complexity that this software has brought? How do you manage that, right? And especially the security aspect, coming with a background of security, was incredibly important for Eugene. And that's how the software started developing. And then commercializing took a couple of years. So that means that really in 2021 is where we found a commercial model. It was almost at the stage that we even didn't know if Chainstack will actually be able to have a commercial model, because we were very much focused on banks. And I think the team had hundreds of meetings with banks and larger enterprises, but it was in 2019, 2020. Many of them all wanted to know. We felt like education company, where we're educating everybody, we do POCs, this is how this works, this is how this works. But nobody really actually commercialized it or did something really in mass scale with it. So we had to pivot as well. And luckily, somebody in our company said, why don't you try this strange up and coming protocol? It's called Polygon. And first, we're not 100% certain if that was something really interesting, but we started with it. And then, yeah, the company started exploding from that moment on. And yeah, the rest is history.
Familiar territory there for me personally. I remember the 2017, 18, 19. Everybody was very interested, especially when a new technology comes out, when something innovative, they don't want to get left behind. They don't be like, oh, there's tokenization, blockchain, smart contracts, decentralized applications. These things sound interesting. They're a little bit different to what we do today, but let's go find out. Let's go try. Mm-hmm. And you get through the POCs, you get through the first initial usage, and then there's, what would that mean for our infrastructure? What would that mean for our finance team? What would that mean for our commercial model? And in a regulated industry such as banking, there's very many banks who are super excited to get into public chain tokenization and digital asset business models, but they still can't, because in the jurisdictions they're based, there isn't regulatory clarity around how that's supposed to work. Or from a risk management perspective, the business case isn't big enough necessarily. And so I feel the pain of having gone through very many projects in my Deloitte days, in my IBM days, my Polkadot days, where guys still felt like they were just kicking the tires a little bit, but without genuinely having the intent. So where did you get to from there? So you've maybe pivoted away a little bit. Polygon became part of the story, or maybe the introduction to then what happened next.
The public. That we said, hey, we have this complex automation, ease of use, super reliable platform built for enterprises. Why couldn't it be mass market for any developer, right? It doesn't matter if we serve one small little developer or a large enterprise, we can do it all. And actually, that has now shown in the last couple of years as well. That's exactly the tradition or the trajectory that we see. A small little project that needs very affordable, reliable infrastructure to test and start their application, start going live into the market, do some testing, and then they explode. And how do you support that? And that trajectory is incredibly important also with some of our customers, that they start and then suddenly they start having billions of requests. And how do you manage that? And because we built the application or the service that we had in such a way that it was targeted to support the larger customers and a lot with automation, because with automation, this is the only way you can scale. And with the flexible models of doing elastic cloud, but also dedicated environments, you talked about banking. One of the key things that we learned is that first the bank wants to do everything themselves. Then I need to be highly secured and you need to be integrated with all their SSOs and security elements. And that means that that's a whole different way of how you operate your classical mass shared infrastructure, shared server, where you basically have 1,000 clients on. But if you combine those two and give that path of growth for a customer that you see, you can start here. Yes, it's shared. It's not your own infrastructure, but you can grow towards a dedicated environment, or actually you could grow towards a hybrid, means you bring your own hardware, or you're so highly secure, you want to have everything in your data center and you want to have it just managed. All of those steps can be happening. The interesting thing though, what we've seen in the last 6 to 7 months is this FOMO of this traditional banking world. Because when we first start speaking with them, they all wanted to try and it's exciting, but nobody did it. Now they've missed out on the last bull run. And yet they're now starting to, we don't want to miss out again. So you see now a lot of those traditional banking, and BlackRock, everybody knows about it. It's great to see that right now, because in the last 6 to 8 months, I think we've seen more traction than what we had in the last 5 years before that, 4 years before that, just because they're fair and missing out, because there is a lot of liquidity and an interesting business model that you can make a lot of money with. So they're trying to now see how they can catch up. And the interesting thing is, security and banking world always want to own everything. We've seen now the first steps also that because of this decentralized world, that they are now changing their perception of, actually, we don't have to manage it ourselves. Actually, if we manage it ourselves, we will never be able to operate this in the scale that it needs to be, in the speed that this world is moving, the Web3 space. We'll never be able to catch up. We will always be lagging behind. So you see now slowly that they're adopting, and if we talk about some of our customers, if it's Rabobank, Walter Kluwer, or Signet Bank, or Itaú Bank in Brazil, all of them have the same kind of concept. They want to do a little bit private. They want to do a little bit through their own platform. They want to do a little bit in the shared environment, just to make sure that they have the flexibility to pivot around and how to serve the market in the best way.
And I think that comes from the very, very command and control method of thinking that certain organizations will have intrinsically from the last 50 years, maybe longer. That we keep it, we control it. If we run it, it won't fail. And then I think gradually you still see now software, for example, infrastructure is different, but software, very few organizations now would go out and saying our expertise is software development. We build our own applications in-house for ourselves and they are better than any applications out there. Actually, no, people have moved to software as a service. People are consuming software from Salesforce, from SAP, from core banking providers, from workflow providers who are expert in managing defining and designing a particular workflow for a particular industry that is fungible, that is flexible, that can be maybe customized a little bit. But then you don't have a bank of 50 software developers in your organization constantly having to learn new models, new methods, new techniques. Software as a service, that ship has sailed, I think, broadly. Infrastructure, maybe not so much. And maybe that's because that's owned by a different part of the organization or because it has a different special place in the CTO's heart in terms of risk or control. I don't know if you feel the same way, but for me, I work in data protection with Midnight. A big part of the story for us is instead of sharing sensitive data, share proofs of data. So the sensitive data never exists on your system. And if you're a CTO or a CISO or a risk officer looking at that saying, if we don't manage the sensitive data, then that's good news. We can't get hacked. It doesn't sit with us. It's not our responsibility. We don't have the cost of governance. We've been liberated from the issue. If we can construct a system that is still robust, but not have to manage the sensitive data on-premise, wouldn't that be better for everybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're still on a journey there for infrastructure.
Yes, and you say software as a service is now a done deal. Partially, yes, but a big time still no. I started my career at Microsoft, and my first very exciting role that I had, or one of the first roles that I had there, was to establish, it's called Application Subscription Providers Agreement, business model, which was the early writer for all that. Dude, you had on a monthly subscription with Azure and, you know, Microsoft 365. But the interesting thing was, and I compare it right now, that particular time period, the early 2000s, where SaaS came up and where I said in 10 years, no small, medium business will have any infrastructure themselves anymore because it makes no sense. A small, medium business is not an infrastructure management type of company. You're selling books, you're selling food, you're having a distribution company or whatever you have, but you're not managing infrastructure. That's not your core of your business. I thought it would move much faster, but it didn't. We're now 25 years later, and still there's a very big portion still not into the cloud and still not in the SaaS model. And many of that Web 1 to Web 2 type of kind of movement, similar right now to have Web 3. I don't even like to call it Web 3 because it's just a next generation of innovation, a next generation of technology, next generation of how you do distributed databases that essentially that I've distributed. It's just the adoption at the time, it's the same kind of cycle, right? What you see right now, because back then when I said that, yeah, in 10 years, everything will be from the cloud, everybody was laughing at me. 50% of my time, I was inside of Microsoft explaining that this is a future. Everything's going to be from the cloud and everything is software as a service. And back then, no license selling, right? Like that was the big thing. And same thing you see right now, right? This decentralization is a movement. I'm not diehard convinced that everything needs to be decentralized, but I think that the technology underneath it, the decentralized database and the transparency that you will get with that and all the kind of capabilities of how to use it into new ways of making things better and easier and faster, that is the future. We cannot go around it. And I would say, yes, in 10 years, the world will be changed, but probably in 10 years, we will still be at a, I don't know, 25% maybe, or 30% of the developers that actually do something on a daily basis with blockchain at this stage, right? And I think that's the biggest challenge that we have right now in this industry.
That's a really nice build. And I think I did a little bit of time in IBM. And I think back at that point, they were saying only 20% of workflows, of enterprise workflows, where they cut it off, whether it was Fortune 500 or all enterprises everywhere, only 20% of workflows have been cloud enabled. And if you think cloud is a concept that's been around for 20 years, maybe longer.
A little bit longer, yeah. Like cloud maybe as a definition, not, but you go back towards the first internet, right? It that was like the first start of the network effect that we have seen around bringing people together and connecting people together. And the first protocol, HTTPS, and those kind of things is a similar kind of scenario where it started about, okay, how do we get access towards certain things remotely? And you don't have to.
The data is not here. It is everything that exists in my access database isn't the world.
And then there is other hosting, their website hosting. Who manages their website themselves or who hosts their own email servers today? Like very few, or at least in the mass market and the small medium business space, I don't think that anybody is hosting it anymore because it makes no sense. Like economically not, security wise not, even though you think that you have your email server on your own premise. It makes no sense. There's no benefits at all. And that comes down back towards this SaaS type of topic that has really taken over in a big way to the benefit for many.
Indeed. And so SaaS is established, but still not there. Let's talk a little bit about blockchain as a service or BaaS, because I think the concept of having infrastructure managers in banks or enterprises just managing the basic cloud infrastructure, data, database infrastructure is already challenging, expensive. Moving into continuous integration, continuous development takes a cost on the business. Your IT team starts to grow. and you want to try and minimize the complexity as much as possible, because you're starting to innovate into new spaces. You're starting to see web, mobile, maybe metaverse, maybe augmented reality, maybe different types of content you're managing, different types of user experiences, customer experiences. The amount of complexity in the digital space is only growing in terms of what these enterprises must provide. And so they're trying to radically simplify as much as possible in as many places as possible. And then imagine starting adding blockchain. But right, guys, you're already struggling with SaaS. You're already finding that infrastructure is hard. Let me talk to you about nodes and smart contracts and consensus and wallets and cryptography and key management. And when you start adding all of those layers of complexity on top of an IT function that's already trying to simplify, it's, oh God, no, please. Just give me APIs and make it make sense. We're all for innovation, but I think this is too hard. In your experience, where are we on blockchain as a service? I know that's a key part of the Chainstack offering. Where are enterprises thinking about blockchain to now? Are they in the, it's too hard, never again box? We tried it once, it didn't work. Or that FOMO is starting to kick in now, and they're starting to see that actually we can have blockchains consumed a little bit more like we can from SaaS. Where are you seeing us on the adoption curve so far?
So first things first, and you come from this world as well, from a background perspective. When you talk about BaaS, and this is also one of the challenges that we have in this industry, is that we use a lot of acronyms and interesting words. First, it's backup as a service. Or it's also seen as banking as a service, and now it's blockchain as a service. So we need to be very careful using some of those words, because that's exactly also where we confuse the non-Web3 related people that you would like to convince and bring on board, because we use so many different words that now mean something different in our ecosystem compared to what they are known. I come from the security world, same as what you do, and BaaS is backup as a service, right? DRS is disaster recovery as a service. So I think that's the first step that we also need to start thinking of. Okay, how can we communicate in such a way also with the outside world to make sure that they understand it? So coming back then towards your question, blockchain as a service, or how do you make sure that the infrastructure that enables you the next generation of SaaS applications or services, it's actually not so difficult. If you look at also what Chainstack does, it's not rocket science, right? As long as you know what you're doing, it's just nothing else as what any other service provider is doing today as well. You have a hardware, on top of that, you pack some virtual environments, and you make sure that that gets up to date on a regular basis and is secure and has a load balancer to make sure that if you have an application that you put in there that uses more capacity than what you have, that it load balances over, or if you have customers worldwide, how do you load balance that around the world? That's no new technology. The only thing that is new is what blockchain actually does. And that is distributing a database that you normally had centrally on a one location, and now you have it decentralized, managed by many or operated by many. And with that, you give the transparency and the ownership more towards the people that would like to use it. The only thing that you need to manage in the right way is the API, right? In the sense of how you connect towards it. So you could say, yes, it's another layer of complexity, but you can also say, yeah, if you as a company will focus on your application and the only thing what you need is an API code, you don't have to worry about how this blockchain as a service would look like, because it's the same thing as a cloud. Today, any kind of startup or any kind of company that does something new, they highly likely will not do things themselves. They go to an AWS, they go to an Azure, or they go to a Google Cloud and take for the first steps the infrastructure from them or from many other service providers out there. If it's, OVH, or if it's Ionis, or if it's even, certain spaces that you can rent by GoDaddy, for example, a virtual environment. All those particular providers provide you the space, they manage it, they make sure that it's secured, and you just run your application. And that's exactly what blockchain infrastructure is as well. And the service that we provide for Chainstack and many others in this particular space, exactly the same thing. We make sure that it's easy, accessible, reliable, and affordable. Coming back towards what's the biggest revolution into the internet space, it was affordable. I still remember that it cost you euros or dollars for a megabit transfer, right? Because peering was not as well orchestrated yet that things were for free. Today, traffic is free. You don't have to pay for it anymore, right? I still remember that your first internet connection was based on traffic that you had. And that optimization, you will see also coming into blockchain more and more. That means that it's much more easier accessible, and costings to operate it or to manage it will be much more scalable. And that's exactly what we would like to be part of, to making sure that we have a very fast and easy access towards those particular infrastructures. And yes, the interesting thing is, you know, if you do it for one, it's okay. If you do it for two, and Maxime, who's on the call as well, he gave me a very interesting example. How is it sometimes to manage 25 blockchains? And what you mentioned here, just try to hold up a ball, tennis ball, with one arm. It's great. And now make it two. Now make it three. Now make it four. Now make it five. Now some people can do a little bit more, but let's try to do it with 25 plus. Every time you add more, of course, the complexity of how you manage that would be difficult. Now, today, our customers, I think that there's only a few customers that use more than 20 protocols that we have to offer. But in the future, that might be that every chain will be interoperable. And that means that you need to have everything supported. And how are you going to manage that? And that's exactly where players like ourselves come into play and to make that easy and accessible. With us, within minutes, you will have access towards any of those 25 plus protocols, and you can switch between them. You can operate them simultaneously. Doesn't matter, for one single control panel. And that's exactly what this world needs more, right? In the sense of making it very easy and taking away the usage or the reasons why people need to do it themselves.
I really like that. And I also love the understatement of what you said midway through, which was, it's not rocket science, but you've got to do it properly. And that's something I guess you could say for everything. Is like the components.
I quote my CTO and co-founder. He says it's boring business. As long as you know what you're doing, it's just boring business. And I like it because it is just to get to that stage. Yeah, it takes some work, and there are plenty of node providers out there. But if you want to offer it to the price performance perspective of what we do, or if you would like to do it in a very reliable way, especially with enterprise SLAs, which this world needs to make sure that this is going to be adopted in a much more larger fashion by the digital world, for example, then it's incredibly important that you adopt some of those particular standards of services as well into your organization. And I think that's a major difference in, you know, between just operating a blockchain or providing a key service that, you know, people can rely on.
Let's jump in on that for a second, because I'd love to talk more about the mundane usefulness of blockchains, because that's I see it in a very similar way. If you think about it as infrastructure or as automation of applications through smart contracts, in isolation, that is quite mundane functionality, but there's a whole bunch of places that can exist and play. But I'd love to touch on SLA for a second, because this is something that's very familiar to you as a concept, maybe less familiar to those listening who aren't managing IT estates, or maybe who aren't procuring IT services from third parties. Blockchains don't promise anything to anybody, right? They're protocols. They exist. You can host a node, you can download a wallet, you can engage with the chain. You may need to pay to make certain transactions or to interact, but by and large, it's open, it's there, it does what it does. There are no promises. It's open.
You SLA, cannot pick up the phone and say, dear Microsoft or dear Oracle, my database is not working.
You do not get to call out the box.
It's not true, right? Because there's a massive community in each of those protocols that are incredibly helpful on a daily basis. But it comes back much more towards the, I would say, the open source type of Linux foundational type of approach as well, where though it's an open source and nobody really owns it, but there are commercial initiatives or also support initiatives and enablements that will support that open source technology to make sure that it is actually adoptable and usable. Because many of the larger enterprises will have a very big hesitation if there is not a very serious organization behind it that can step in, support, help when S hit the fence. So
it's not your relationship manager, it's Steve in Papua New Guinea, who's just happens to be online right now and has had a little bit of an experience in this problem. Or maybe it's a developer relations team, or maybe it's part of a decentralized community team. Like you said, you're never alone, but there's no penalty if something doesn't go down. If Solana decides to have the weekend off, you don't get money for that. that's just how it goes. But talk to me about how SLA works in the chain stack world.
Same as it works anywhere else in the traditional world. We guarantee performance, uptime, reliability. If we don't hit it, you get money back. And we guarantee you that within a certain time frame, we will be speaking with you to fix an issue. And the interesting thing is that the majority of the issues today is not because of actually the blockchain is not working, but it's just that people in many ways are still also trying new things out. And it's just simple, small little snippet of code that just had forgot, oh, that need to be changed from this name to this name. Because it's a lot of learning kind of things that people are doing right now. And because you have that team in the back end that can supply that, you can actually help those companies that would like to get into this particular space have a much better experience on getting towards the first hurdles and getting actually the applications services live. And although it's not always our job because we are managing our infrastructure, but in a lot of cases when they come towards our support and say, oh, your infrastructure is not working, it's not returning, or we're so many blocks behind. And then we look into it and then we find out, oh, interesting, you have done this and this, maybe change that. And then we'll fix it right away. And I think that's it's a major thing that is happening right now, because it's not a very established market yet, that this is the type of service that you can expect also from a company like us.
Amazing. And that's already challenging in terms of the being there and supporting the customers and doing that on behalf of the industry. Firstly, thank you. Secondly, there's 25 plus chains in there, right? I'm going to run down some of them here because I have the website up in terms of which are the blockchains that are currently supported. We've got Ethereum, Polygon, BNB. We've got Base, Avalanche, Arbitrum, ZK Sync. Nice to see some ZK in there. Polygon, Optimism. Going further down, Solana, Scroll, Aptos, Kronos, Starknet, Harmony, Tezos, Bitcoin, Hyperledger Fabric, Corda, Quorum, and Multichain. Right? This is not, there's 25 blockchains and they're all EVMs. There are some quite distinct blockchains in there. Talk to us about the challenge of being able to integrate and update and support 25 or so chains. That feels like a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of infrastructure and it's a lot of dedication of the team. And let me take the opportunity here also to thank that team, right? We have a couple of incredible people in our organization that does this day and night. When I say day and night, this is not like the general, I would say, release cycles that we have been experiencing from our typical Web2 type of organizations. Here in 6 months, we're gonna, this is about nonstop, one after another. And yeah, you just need to manage that. From that perspective, yes, it takes a lot of infrastructure. But as long as you know how to process it and you have structure in place, how to manage it, and coming back to what I mentioned before, it's not rocket science. It's just like any other software that is out there. It's just a new technology. It's a new innovation that you will have your updates and upgrade cycles. And it's maybe a little bit different. But if you stick towards your processes and structures of how to do it in a professional way, then if you do it for one or you do it for 100, sure, you always need a little bit more effort and resources to manage it. But as long as it makes sense, then it should be not an issue. I think the biggest interesting futuristic outlook that we are going to be very excited out to look for, there will not be 150 chains that will be the ones that are going to be there forever. I think it's like right now figuring out how this market can scale and how the evolutions and some of those chains will develop over time. And then there will be a set of chains that will make the difference in this particular industry. And for us, it's very important that we support the ones that we believe or that we see the traction or that we have a lot of community behind it that would like to have this infrastructure and the simplification and reliability that we offer. That's why we would like to offer those particular chains. But it doesn't mean that every chain is the same, right? Like we have chains that have very low transactions or involvements and some have a little bit more, but we have also, I would say, the raw diamonds in the mix that looks from the outside, I'm not so sure if that is really a potential, but eventually over time, and Polygon was one of them, they actually turned into, as you know, one of the major important chains for the future as well. That's why we support us a little bit more than just the key ones that are making the market and the cap tables.
And that was my question there. So I guess there's a challenge. There's hundreds and hundreds of blockchains, some of them coming up, some of them established. What would it take, or what's the process that you guys go through in Chainstack to evaluate different chains to maybe make sure the portfolio is well balanced in terms of up and coming mm-hmm. and established? How would a Cardano or a Midnight, for example, as we're not even in mainnet yet, but mm-hmm. how would a new or up and coming chain approach Chainstack? And what would you need to see to say, you know what, that feels like a project we need to support, or that seems like a good commercial proposition for us?
Yeah. So there are three ways. The first way is that we have an incredible team, product management team, and developer relationship team that constantly are talking to the industry, and they're supervising what is happening. And they, you know, it's hard to explain and show here, but they have Notion pages that are, you know, you cannot even see my arms here, with all of the information about all of the different protocols and nodes and chains that we have. And basically they track what is going on. And we really look at what's happening in the ecosystem and how many developers are coming in there and what are the biggest challenges that they have. And is there an opportunity that we can simplify that for them and that we can actually add a value add? Because if there's no value add to give from our side, it makes no sense to support it, right? So there's some, I would say, some meme coins out here that people sometimes call it a pyramid scheme or whatever. Can we support them? Sure. Is there anything that people would like to do with it? No. So why would you? So that's the first thing. So that's what the team does. The second thing is they're up and coming chains that we don't know about or that we would see from anything that is happening in the market that has not the traction yet. But they will come towards us and say, we want to go live. The biggest challenge is easy access to affordable and reliable and easy to manage infrastructure. Can you make this possible for us? And that's absolutely, then we go into conversations and we have a BIDL program, how we call it, where you have multiple stages of how we can expose it. And that is all the way from, here's a dedicated node and you can point it towards your customers, towards completely fully integrated. We even offer it sponsored free accounts towards developers that would like to start. And so we package that in a way how the protocol that the chain would like to have it. And then there's a third way. And the third way is special requests. And so we have a voting page for our community. And sometimes we pick out features and functionalities or new chains that have been got a lot of votes and we don't know why. There's also a little bit of commercial model, right? If there's enough demand for it, even though it's a small community, but there's a lot of demand for providing a better service to operate and manage your nodes, then absolutely that's for us interesting as well. And that goes publicly, means individual developers that can go to our website and vote, but it can also be some of our top larger players. We have a very large customer in Chainlink and they have many nodes of ours. And if they have a special request, there will be substantial volume behind it for a smaller chain, then we can actually also operate it for them if they want to.
Very interesting. I like that it's not just all based on your commercial model alone, or that the market intelligence just doesn't come from what do we see on the ground or what do the executives think, actually that the community has a role to play. I think that's really powerful. It also means that the dog with hat community, if you want to see your nodes hosted on Chainstack, go start spamming the community page. I don't know whether that's going to be something you'll see soon, but I'm sure, you know, every project under the sun has a community that every now and then, if they know that infrastructure is a big part or accessibility to infrastructure is a big part of their scaling and nobody in the community is doing it, approaching a team like a Chainstack is exactly the way that you start getting progress. If it's hard to build, if usability or developer experience isn't there, this is exactly what I would be looking at as a next step, is saying, who do we go talk to? Who do we use as an enabler or as a hyperscaler for us to get more nodes in the network, more people building, making the developer experience better than it is today? Makes a ton of sense. Really interesting. And again, it's not necessarily that there has to be a promise or a commercial proposition on the table. You guys may also just look at saying, we think, and for example, the zero knowledge chains in your portfolio today, those are somewhat different to traditional, basic, transparent layer ones, everything mm-hmm. on chain, everything visible, metadata everywhere. Mm-hmm. ZK offers, and I have some experience of this, ZK offers a very different way of building apps, a very different way of creating the app architecture. Again, using proofs instead of sending sensitive data. You guys have obviously looked at it and said, actually, there's an interesting angle to this for people who want to develop in Web3. We want to be here to support that. Or yeah. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it appears yeah. from your portfolio that you see that as an interesting area.
Yeah, Yeah. And, you know, the private blockchain area and app chain area is also still something that we also see room for growth as well. And that's one of the key things that we want to keep as a differentiator as well in the market, that we would like to not limit ourselves of what the capabilities are for offering just a certain small segment, because we don't know. We don't know where this world is going to go. And we all have a hope, or we all have ideas and visions. But I think the most important thing is, if you don't give a chance towards something, then it will be very difficult to actually see what the potential is. And that's exactly how we started. Like, it was actually, a marketing person within our company that recommended, why don't you support publicly Polygon, right? And it was nothing there, right? And out of that, nothing came what Polygon is today. But I think that there will be more of those examples coming over the coming years as well. And we just need to make sure that we give also those people the chance. And that's also why you see, if you go towards our website, that the biggest community that we have today are individual developers or small little startups that have just a free package with us. They don't pay us anything. Only if they are commercializing, they will be able to upgrade to a higher package. But yeah, that free offering is, I think, also part of our, I would say not obligation, but I would say our part of also helping the ecosystem to grow further. Right. Right now, I don't think that we have even 10% of the worldwide developers touching blockchain. So we have 27 million developers worldwide, probably maybe to 30 in the next couple of years. So let's get to 25% of those. Then you can say you have a very well-established technology into the industry that many of the developers know how to build on, or it's part of your education process for any kind of software attack that you would like, track that you would like to get into, then you can start thinking about also how you would do this differently. But for now, yeah, we have also an obligation to help to support this ecosystem in the best possible way.
Love that. And let's bring it to life with some case studies, if we may. I know there's some clients we can't talk about, and there's no intent to share anything that's secretive or commercially sensitive, but maybe let's bring some of the use cases or some of the customers that use ChainStack today to life a little bit. If you've got a couple of examples, I know you're not allowed to have favorites, but what would be some that you would use to illustrate?
It's too many to call, right? Like ChainStack, we have had over 100,000 developers on our platform and thousands of enterprises. But maybe we can talk about what, for me as a person, are use cases that I think would be very interesting. First use case is, let's transform that banking world. I wanted to use the F word, but I should probably not say it. The interesting thing is, I am maybe not a Web3 native type of person, right? I'm an infrastructure guy, come from the Web2. Majority of my time and experience came from that Web2 world. But I think that I speak for many of us that our freaking banking system is just so terrible. And I can say here, we're not proud, that I'm probably one of the few persons that literally physically have been thrown out of a bank before, how frustrated I was. And I'm a very kind person in general, but if you cannot get access to your money, even though they have all the data, your passport, your credit cards, and they say, oh, sorry, sir, that was a moment that I lost my ass.
It's okay, you can swear on the show. It's a family show, but we can bleep them out later. So if you want to go full bore, if you want to tell the story unabridged and unfiltered.
Yeah, I know. Like, you know, it is just, you want to make an investment and you're time pressured, and you know that you want to make a transfer. So you go to the bank because that is an easier in person. You can make that happen and get priority service. And you're a very worldwide bank. And they basically tell you first thing, sorry, sir, you don't have a bank account. I said, here's my card, my number, right? Like, I don't have a bank account? No. Oh, sorry. And then they finally found it after they called somebody on the other side of the ocean. And then they basically said, I'm sorry, but we can't have access to it because there's no activity in the bank. And I said, what do you mean? I've been paying into this bank account for years. Yeah, but you have not taken money out. What do you mean? Your bank account is inactive because I have not taken money out? This should be beneficial.
How is banking supposed to work?
It completely makes no sense. And then we finally got to the stage that I basically had to fill out 1,000 forms, and I just lost it. And I basically said, anyway, so that was my banking story many years ago. I'm hopefully now a little bit wiser and not trying to frustrate myself with that particular. I still use it, sadly, not my, in many ways that you have to. But I think that is the world case scenario. So that's my personal experience. But I think also what we should also not forget is that those many of those banks, if you have a bank account, you have a certain financial freedom today to make more money. You can get interest on it and your money can work for you. You can do investments. But how many people in the world cannot do that? How many people in the world has an income that for no bank is interested to serve, right? Because it's just costing more than basically what you have as a benefit. And I think this is something that blockchain technology with all the wallets and, for example, Trust Wallet is a company of ours, like making accessibility to wallets to anyone. And almost everybody has a phone. If you have a phone, you can get access to your own bank account. And I think this is something that is truly very amazing. And if it gets more and more easier to use and, you know, more secure, then definitely also the trust in the larger network that you need to have, the network effect that you need to have to get this into mass market is going to be revolutionizing also the banking industry. So that's definitely one use case that I see in our customer base a lot of interesting concepts that trying to do that. The second one, this is also personally for me, which is interesting, is your privacy. And I think that everybody has had that situation once.
Everybody has a data privacy story or a hacking story.
You basically just talked about some kind of food or some kind of location, you know, some kind of hiking that I did. And that's my personal experience. And I talked with hiking with some person and boom, my first app, that advertisement that I see on my app, I see hiking in that location. So how the heck is that possible? So I think privacy is something, and it goes beyond just the privacy itself, because if you use Google search, then anything gets connected and to all the apps that you have, and the same sort of Microsoft, and it's okay. I've accepted that there is no privacy, but there is a very interesting concept. And one of our customers is Brave Browser that is really trying to tackle that. So they are a customer of ours and I'm using them. And this is for me a way that you get a little bit of control back. You control your own privacy and what how you would like to protect against ads, and you do not share as what you would normally share when you're Google. Yes, there is certain benefits that I have been very still a Google user as well, and also from Google Mail I use it. But those kind of things will establish more in the future as well. And I think it's a perfect example how you can get more control. And that privacy goes also more into the same as with gaming, right? I'm an old school guy, right? I was one of the first persons that started to use the Xbox, for example, with Microsoft, and before that Atari and so on. But what it was, if you have an avatar, you have it in one and you just don't own it, right? The gaming company owns it and they can control it. What if your avatar, and that's plenty of examples out there, you own it and you can bring it from one game to another and you can exchange it. How cool will it be? Because it will be your persona. And personally, and this comes back then towards your privacy as well in my personal world, and it's maybe another interesting example as well. I wanted to do a health checkup for me. I do it every year, making sure that, but I've done it in multiple countries. How do I make sure that all the information that I had previously in my historic from one country with one doctor and one health check, how do I make sure that they get, they don't. So you need to do it all over again. So you fill out all the forms. So how cool would it be if all this data will be somehow stored into a centralized blockchain that you control? And if you go make an appointment and the doctor or the institution ask you for your information, you basically say, okay, here's my history, here's my information. That means you have it all centrally and you control it, you own it. You decide who you share it with and you make public. And I think those kind of interesting use case scenarios are really cool for the future also to consider. That will definitely help many things.
Love those. And lots of relatable examples. I think the idea of the banking, I would probably extend even further, is actually participation in a global economy without boundaries. Right? The banking system or the ability to make and receive payments is hinders many people's ability to, if I live in Saudi Arabia and I want to order shoes from the US, that's not a super easy thing to do at the moment because of certain ways that my money and my banks may or may not interact with corresponding banks. Look at what Axie Infinity did for the Philippines. There were millions of local users who were playing video games because they were earning, at that point in time, a greater dollar amount per hour for the effort they put in than they could be working locally. Now, that's not necessarily great for the local physical economy, but that creates arbitrage of people's time committed to problems and projects in exchange for value. That opens up accessibility, that opens up work and value creation opportunities for people who can only work certain hours, again, provided that you're connected to a device, obviously pay your taxes, but this breaks down barriers of employment, breaks down barriers of being able to participate in economies more than just having the bank. The bank is the conduit for value transfer, but it goes even further than that. And my only other kind of build on the point around privacy is, when we talk about privacy or data protection, people always bring it back to themselves because they have their hacking experience or they have their slightly creepily, overly familiar recommendation experience that they've had using an Apple or a Google phone or whatever else it is. But for enterprises, it's super important as well. The ability for small businesses to participate in tenders without necessarily living in fear of nepotism or fearing that because they're a small business, they won't be chosen, or that the intellectual property they create around a particular formulation or a particular product doesn't get taken as part of the process and then sold or given to somebody else in the traditional supply chain. And you know, their opportunity to grow or their competitive advantage is gone because they've had to commit certain information that by all rights should remain private to them. There's a whole bunch of places that one can go. We are very nearly at time, but I have one final question for you, if I may, JJ, which is for anybody out there. You've talked very much about the adoption of blockchain, enterprises, organizations, individual founders, startups, developers starting to engage with blockchain technology. For those people who still haven't yet, for those who are still on the fence, maybe FOMOing in from the outside, what would be your advice to anybody looking to build with blockchain in 2024?
It's a good one, because I think that if I talk privately to people in a sense of taking away the fear and people think about speculation, like, I have nothing against the speculation and all the coin trading, but you know, as your chain stack doesn't have a coin, we don't do staking and no validation or custodial type of things. We really want to focus on that building kind of aspect. And I think that's the biggest hurdle today, is that the classical Web2 world or the traditional world has not found that bridge yet towards the blockchain. And it means that anybody that would like to get into this space would need to look first at, okay, what do you want to achieve, right? Like, what do you would like to get out of the blockchain, right? You need to have a very clear use case that you say, okay, I want to make, I know, a foundation. I want to make all my transactions that I'm doing publicly available. And then you basically look, okay, so how many transactions you do and which chain is the most suitable one to do so. But also, and maybe that is coming back towards your previous question as well, look at partners that are incredibly good in helping and supporting to bring the traditional world on chain. Chainlink is one of our larger customers. That's a typical example of how they are trying to help to bring the traditional world on chain. And I think anyone that wants to go into blockchain, one, just don't try to reinvent the wheel, right? It's this old saying that I think I've been hearing for the last 25, 30 years that I've been in the IT industry, is that don't try to reinvent the wheel, because there's already so many things done. And with those partners, like, for example, Chainlink, you can make things much more easier to actually do that transition into blockchain. And I think that's the second major suggestion that I would make if you would like to go into blockchain. And the third thing for building is, I think that if you are a serious builder, you want to do something, I would say, that will change or that will have a major impact on the industry and beyond, then make sure that you work with a partner that has longevity as well, in the sense of how they support you through the growth period. Because there's plenty of free and cheap services out there, which are absolutely fine for when you start. But I think that the journey towards professionalism and making a commercial model that can scale, and that is, I think, a very important method. And I see it in some of our engagements with some of the larger enterprises about securities and certifications that you need to have and insurances that you need to have. This world is a lot about you don't have all that, but you don't need all that. You can still do it. And people are trying a lot. That's great. But soon as you start commercializing, you expose yourselves towards what is out there, then having a partner on the back end that can back you up with some of those particular certifications and professional support and so on is going to be incredibly important, because otherwise you will face your difficulties later on.
There we go. Some great advice. JJ, thank you so much for giving us the final thought. I think, honestly speaking, when it comes down to it, whether you're in Web 2, Web 3, or whatever you care to call it, some of the fundamental principles still remain of scalability, security, usability, accessibility. These are technology principles that to transcend no rocket all science, layers of the web.
No different.
Just do it properly.
Exactly. Right.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you so much, JJ. Thank you, Maxime, for making this happen. Shout out to Chainstack. Shout out to Chainlink. Shout out to everybody else who we mentioned on the show. Have a great rest of your day, JJ, and stay safe out there.
Thank you, Anthony, for having me.
Thanks again for listening to the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. As always, opinions in this episode are mine and those of my guests alone. If you want to find out more, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Check out some of the other episodes on the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast, and check out the YouTube channel, also called Blockchain Won't Save the World. Stay safe out there.